Well, one, I want to thank everyone who's managed to stay. If it feels like 8 hours that you've been listening to us, the good news is it's only like 7 hours and 50 minutes. And secondly, I'm going to summarize the day, except for what Arvind covered. I am not going to cover that that at all. So I want to start again. I want to start again with the picture we showed at the beginning of the day, because hopefully now, as we've gone through the day, and my colleagues and I have described what IBM has become, what we've been able to build through the investments we've made, both organically through acquisitions, and as Ginny started, you know, we are a higher value model, and therefore we've also divested a lot. So obviously we don't put all the things that we no longer have, but this picture. The picture we show today is much, much different from where we were 3 years ago. And I've heard it from a number of you as I've walked around and interacted. The sense that I've been told is that it feels different. We see it's different, and our description of the cognitive technologies on the cloud with that industry focus is resonating. So I wanted to start with that chart again, because I'm going to talk about it as we go through the rest of the discussion, and I want to make sure that we keep in mind what IBM has become. So not to spend too long on history. Sounds like it's raining. So you're not. Well, it's not raining. It just sounds like it's raining. Not to spend too much time on history, but you know, we've said we've come out of this as a cognitive solutions and cloud platform company, and I wanted to put a little context around the platforms we've built, which you've seen today. And so I wanted to spend a little bit of time on history, because we have built other platforms. Ginny's talked about this, and we have platforms today. So I wanted to do two things. I wanted to describe a little bit the platforms we've built, but more importantly, keep in mind that the platforms we've built that are with us still today were driven by the macro trends of the time. And that's true today, and it was true when we built these initially. So as the programmable era got underway, its growth was certainly driven by data and the use of data. And we have a metric here of how megabytes moved to terabytes. I know it seems so pedestrian in today's terms, megabytes moving to terabytes, but at the time it was a big deal. And that shift to data also, it both enabled and then was fueled by what was going on in the economy. And you can see we've picked just one, but we've picked one macro trend, which was the U.S. commercial banking system expanded rapidly in the amount of assets it measured and it managed. So we built a mainframe platform way, way back 50-plus years ago now. You're 50, mainframe's 53 this year? 54? 53? So we built the platform 53 years ago, but it's still with us today, and it's still tied into the macro trends that we see today. When we then go to the digital era, and again, just to describe the chart a little bit, we've picked internet traffic as one metric that fills that sort of that macro measurement, terabytes now to exabytes. Keep in mind that an exabyte, and I promised I wasn't going to sound like Arvind. This is just a very simple statistic. There's nothing I can say that'll make me sound like Arvind, by the way, so there's really low risk of that. But an exabyte a terabyte is a million exabytes, just to give you a sense of the scale. So as we moved into the digital era and the internet came in, the web came in, we built two more businesses, two more platforms that, are still with us today. We built a very powerful middleware business, which is, you know, in some aspects, it's sort of the glue that allows the internet, allowed it to become a fully transactional business platform, right? So it used to serve up information. I used to look at it on a screen, and over the last two decades now, IBM, with our middleware platform and some others, have turned that into a fully transactional business platform. We built an outsourcing business. We started this, you know, decades ago. As the complexity was becoming too substantial for clients to manage, and quite frankly, as the skills were becoming more and more specialized, it's harder to build those pool of skills in order to run these complex systems. So we built an outsourcing business many decades ago. Again, Martin Yetter talked about it today, still with us and still very powerful. So this idea that IBM builds platforms is not at all new. The idea that we use modern technologies apply them in an industry context to solve business problems is a trend that is still with us today. So now we get into the cognitive era. And again, I want to point out, make sure that nobody thinks that like the mainframe's gone away or the outsourcing business has gone away. They are very robust businesses. They're doing modern things. My colleagues have talked about them, but they are platforms that are still with us today. Now, when we get to today's world, you know, we go from exabytes to zettabytes. And the metric we picked, again, only one, but connected devices. And my colleagues, you know, John referred to our IoT platform, where we had 700 plus clients in Munich a couple weeks ago to talk about what they're doing. But think about the IoT platform and how many connected devices, all the data that's going to create. We are in now that cognitive world, which, as we've said, requires a cognitive platform. It requires a technology that isn't going to get programmed the way old technologies did. It's not. If you go to Stanford, you can, how smart you are, you cannot look at these pools of data and ask those programmers to find me the relationship between X and Y. That's the way analytics has worked for a long time, but it doesn't work on these pools of data. You need a cognitive system that can ingest the data and you can interact with it in order to find those relationships. So as we now continue to build these platforms, we talked today a lot about how those have been built on an industry context. So I just want to put together what we talked about today. So first, and these aren't necessarily in order, although David did go first, he talked about Watson. And Watson, our cognitive decision support, John talked about a $2 trillion opportunity to improve decisions. And you know, as part of that, the $500 billion decision support market is going to be addressed by, and quite frankly, we believe will be won by Watson, which is, as we said before, the AI, the cognitive platform for business. It's 4,000 patents, which, you know, seems like a lot of patents. I think for our researchers, it's probably like 2.5 weeks or something. Like, they don't do it just in 2.5 weeks. It takes longer than that. But so 4,000 patents. We've built this over 5 years. This is a good example of an organic investment we've made. Also, we've talked about the enterprise cloud. So think about that infrastructure layer. Now, David didn't spend a ton of time. He talked about it. And he talked about how he's engineering it with Watson and that infrastructure platform. But we are not confused. It's very clear to us we have to, and we do, have a very competitive infrastructure layer. We know what those volume games are like, and we know that you have to be competitive at the infrastructure layer. We also don't think that we have to be the largest in order to be competitive, but we know we have to be competitive, and the technologies we have today, including that infrastructure layer, including the platform that's enterprise grade called Bluemix, and now some of the new technologies we've put in there, like Object Store, which my colleagues have also talked about a couple of times, make this a very robust infrastructure-only layer. So again, David didn't spend a lot of time on it, but it is important. We recognize that we will always have a very competitive infrastructure layer on which we will build then, as we talked about, you know, Watson, or on which we will build a healthcare platform. Deborah spent a fair bit of time, talked about all the unique aspects of what a healthcare platform has to have. This is a substantial market opportunity. It's an opportunity that we bring in a unique set of data sets, so our partners can use those, our clients can use those as well, but it has unique features. Again, all aligned in an industry context so that it can operate in that regulatory framework that it needs. But a big opportunity for us. We talked a little bit about IoT in a couple of different aspects. Is, you know, for us, a lot of this starts with our acquisition of the Weather Company. We have, and Ginny noted it, we have the world's largest commercial ingestion machine, half a petabyte a day. So with that Weather Company, we get that high volume data platform. It will capitalize on the growth of all those connected devices. There were a number of examples, John talked about them as well, that were running across different industries. But again, our IoT platform, ready to go, in place, with also, again, unique data sets that bring value. We also talked a little bit about, Bridget did, and she talked with some of our clients about financial services. Again, a big opportunity. I think Bridget laid it out pretty well. Big opportunity. Maybe not the sexiest stuff that you're going to read about in the paper, but it is a really important part of how our clients run, and a really important part of how we can help them drive their business models. And there is a ton of value there for us to help them find. We bought, as you know, Promontory, and Bridget did a nice job of explaining who Promontory was. But the shorthand for me is, you know, who trains your data matters. You're not going to become a regulatory expert by searching the web and trying to figure out what the banking regulations are. So yes, you have to understand all the regulations. We have an ingestion machine that helps us to do that. But the idea of Promontory training the data is far more powerful than just the simple idea of I'm going to go search a bunch of documents and see what I can learn. And then while it's the last one on the chart, that's not because we're running out of ideas, it's really because it's the last one on the chart. You know, we saw some of our work on blockchain. We had a couple of clients up again. The day, as you know, was structured not only around us telling you about our business, but it was structured around our clients telling you how they're using our technology, how they're using our industry expertise in order to improve their businesses. So blockchain was something we spent a fair bit of time on. It's not just financial services, it is the supply chains of the world. And as Ginny said right up front, you know, it can help transfer any asset, digital asset, financial asset, doesn't matter, any asset can get transferred through a blockchain network. And as Ginny noted, we use it ourselves. We use it in global financing to run our commercial financing business. So when we take that picture, and Ginny has talked about our focus on cognitive cloud and industry. Again, these are tied into the macro events that you can see, the macro trends that you can see. So as an example, cognitive, you know, we had these 34 billion connected devices by 2020, 44 zettabytes, 44 trillion gigabytes of data by 2020. So that ramp is going to be tremendous. You saw it, again, we started at terabytes and we moved up into, now we're talking about zettabytes over the last 50 years. But you can see how that's going to play out on an industry basis. We talked about cloud. We talked about what might and might not move to a cloud kind of a structure. Arvind showed from an application perspective, what are the most likely to move and when. The bulk of enterprises are committing to cloud architectures over the next few years. That's more likely to be multiple cloud architectures, but they are going to make that decision around what cloud architecture are they going to use. And then interestingly, from an architecture standpoint, from a capability standpoint, David did talk a little bit about the importance of video. Again, measurable externally, the bulk of internet traffic will be video. That's why we have an object store on our cloud in order to help our clients. And then from an industry basis, you know, we have industry expertise. We talked a fair bit about the demographics. Deborah talked about, again, the unique elements of health. Bridget talked about finance. So those are visible, if you will, macro elements within the economy. And that cognitive cloud and industry perspective then permeates across our segments. So as we now start to take everything you've seen and our themes for the day and map it back to our segments, you know, and we changed them last year, as you know, to give you a better view of the business. The feedback we've gotten is that it's very helpful, and it helps our investors understand why we make the investments we make, helps them understand where we see value, helps them understand where we're going. But those same three elements now translate across each of the segments. So in cognitive, for instance, obviously the massive data explosion, as I mentioned, requires cognitive because you can't program these systems the same way anymore. In cloud, as an example, in our technology services business, Martin Yetter talked about how the majority of now what we're moving our clients into are cloud platforms for them. So even in our outsourcing business, we are moving our clients into a cloud, an agile kind of a cloud work frame. So now on a segment basis, as we now deconstruct our overall into the segments, again, on the new segment basis, a couple of points to make, and we'll go through each of the segments one by one. The way these charts laid out is we have some financial highlights on the top left. We have some measures of capabilities and adoption. My colleagues have talked about these, but again, just for reference, we put a few up there. We talk about a model for each of these segments on the top right, and then on a going forward basis, what trends our business will be taking advantage of. So from a cognitive solutions, which does represent, you know, that higher growth solution software is in that cognitive solutions segment, has the bulk of, you know, that kind of that Watson silver thread that we've been talking about. We see solid mid-single digit revenue growth across that whole segment, with the as-a-service continuing to grow. And you can see our as-a-service now just within the segment is up to $1.8 billion on an exit run rate basis at the end of the fourth. So that software solutions revenue, 6% last quarter, we see continued mid-single digit growth for that segment. And I see mid-single digit profit growth. So we don't see the need to continue to invest at a higher rate than our revenue is growing, which is a difference, for us. As we've talked about for the last couple of years, we've been investing pretty heavily, both organically as well as to get the acquisitions that we have into our run rate. And now from a model base, we see revenue and profit growing at a mid-single digit level. GBS. We spent a fair bit of time, Mark spent a fair bit of time on GBS, talking not only about how he's reworking the practices, how he's reworking how clients consume us and the kinds of work we do, but he also spent a bit of time on how he's going to improve margins. And so from our perspective, within the IBM financial model, what GBS will deliver is low single-digit growth over time. Now, we've got some work to get there, right? GBS was down last quarter. As we've talked about, the signposts, if you will, to get GBS back to growth are we need consistent signings growth. Consistent signings growth gets you to backlog growth, and backlog growth gets you to revenue growth. As we said on the call, you know, we'll take the first step here in the first quarter when we expect our signings to grow, but we got to start that process. So this model is not necessarily what I'm saying will be in there for the full year. We don't need them to achieve this model for the full year, but we will see improvements in GBS now as Mark's plan starts to take effect. And over time, low single-digit revenue, mid-single-digit profit growth in our GBS business. In technology services and cloud platforms, again, Martin Yetter talked about how he can expand margins both in the mix of his business as well as in productivity in his business. Some of it's using cognitive, but he's got a pretty good track record now of delivering margin expansion. The infrastructure services business, as we talked about on the call, grew margins last year. Technology services, which is, again, a platform for others to outsource their maintenance to us, is starting to get through that mix issue they have with IBM maintenance margins being a bit higher than what they're getting from non-IBM. And so as we work our way through that, he'll get that back to margin growth as well. But in total, he's got a reasonable track record of getting back to margin growth. And then as we talked about on the cloud will continue to generate improved margins as we get more and more scale on there. We have invested quite heavily, as we've talked about before. So with continued improvements in infrastructure services, Martin will address the mix issue as he talked about, and then our scale on the cloud. We would expect that over the long term, that segment can deliver low single-digit revenue and mid-single-digit profit growth as well. On a systems basis, Tom did a nice job. It was probably sort of from an energy standpoint, you can feel it in the room, people are starting to feel their lunch a bit, but Tom, I think you did a nice job getting everyone excited about what is a high value segment for us. So, you know, we have some performance highlights. The mainframe, mainframe shipped cycle to cycle MIPS growth consistent with what we've seen in the past, double digit growth. Power Linux continues to do really, really well. So we're seeing share gain in Power Linux. You know, I guess my observation is our competitor in that space is advertising on TV and they have 98% market share. You got to wonder what they're worried about if they got 98% market share. You don't tend to advertise a lot with that kind of share. But we are being successful in Power Linux and we are seeing a lot of growth and we're taking share at that low end. And then Tom talked a bit about flash storage, how the market's moving to flash, and we're seeing a lot of value in the software-defined space. So on a go-forward basis, we expect this to continue to be a high-value part of the model. As Tom noted and Ginny noted on when we talked about divestitures, we've gotten out of parts of this market that have commoditized. What we have now is, though, the high-value systems business that we like. We've also done the hard work around finding a scale semiconductor manufacturing partner. That's a reason for us to be able to stay in the business. It's not a reason for us to want to get out of the business. So that enables us, as my colleague said, that enables us to redirect our capital into areas that where we see more growth and not put $10 billion, for instance, into a new fab to get to 10 and 7 nanometer. Over time, we would expect that business to be fairly stable. That's not different from a model perspective than what it would have been in the past. Fairly stable is good for this business. That means you're delivering price performance. That means you're able to generate enough to reinvest to keep those platforms contemporary. And over time, with stable revenue performance, we think it can continue to contribute profit to the IBM model as well. And then on global financing, just a moment on global financing first. As you know, the segment hasn't changed, right? So the definition of global financing segment is exactly the same as what it was before. All we're doing is we've consolidated the IBM global financing entities that are around the world. We're in 40 or 50 countries versus the 172 we're in IBM. We're in 40 or 50 different countries. We just put them all together. In fact, every time I tell an investor or I tell someone that all we've done is put them all together, they go like, I thought you already did it that way. Well, turns out we didn't. So in many ways, this is just a consolidation of our operations. We may go out to the market. We're expecting to go out to the market and have IGF, Global Financing, issue debt directly to the markets at the sometime this year. But we've used to do that in the past as well. So from an IGF standpoint, again, segment's the same, the mission's the same, the risk profile's the same. The risk profile is the same. So when we now take all of those pieces and we just lined them up, right? Revenue on the left side, PTI on the right side. I'm going to talk a bit more about each of them. But you get to a model in total for IBM that is low single-digit revenue and mid-single-digit pre-tax income. That's what you get to in IBM in total. So let's disaggregate that. Let's look at revenue first. This is a format of a chart that we've used in the past. And it goes through a couple of points. One, as Ginny started with today, you know, $33 billion in strategic imperatives, now 41% of the business. And while we said we'd be 40% by 18, obviously we got there 2 years early, but we said we'd be $40 billion by 2018, and we are, I'd say, ahead of schedule. In fact, we drew a dotted line at the rate we would need in order to get to the $40 billion by 2018, and it's a little bit slower than where we are today. I'm not saying they're slowing down. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that we don't need to operate at the same level to get where we said we'd be when we started this discussion 3 years ago. So we're on track or ahead of track on the $40 billion. We've talked a lot about our as-a-service business and how fast it's grown, $8.6 billion on an exit run rate. As we both generate new offerings that are as a service. A lot of what David's putting together is as a service. A lot of what Deborah's putting together is as a service. And then we also have businesses today that were already as a service. So our as a service content continues to climb. And then within that, of course, which runs across the strategic imperatives, continued double-digit growth. The core in 2016 on an ex-currency basis was down about 10. So, you know, we're in the same, not same position. We're better off because we have a better mix, but we have the phenomena is no different than what we talked about last year, right? We've got a big part of our business is in declining markets. It's high value, so it's worth some investment, and it's certainly worth staying focused on it and making sure it's contemporary. My colleagues talked about how they're doing that in their businesses, and then we have massive reinvestment of our clients' productivity that they've generated with our help, productivity generated getting reinvested in those new areas. So that dynamic is very similar to what you've seen in the past. On the margin side then, what we've put together in one spot for you is what everybody talked about when it comes to profitability. So, you know, John and his team and David and others who are on that cognitive segment, they talked about where they see growth. They talked about revenue growth, and that revenue growth, again, as we've gotten now through the big headwind of spending growth that we needed to get there That now comes at better profits, obviously. And then from a, and we're not relying, obviously, on a ton of revenue growth outside of those, outside of that growth. Everything else is about a point. And then on the services side, both Martin and Mark talked about their opportunities to improve their margins. You know, there were just from the chart, remember, 50 basis points in the technology services segment, 50 basis points in GBS. Given the weighting of those businesses, they deliver each, you know, 1.5 or half a point of profit dollar growth in the model. So when we think about revenue, the revenue growth coming out of the Cognitive Solutions will drive profit dollar growth, and the margin improvements will drive the rest out of services. From a free cash flow perspective, this is data that we've shared in the past. You know, we've been very stable. We showed this view a couple of years ago already. When you adjust the reported free cash flow realization for book and cash taxes and the differential that comes out of cash gains, which goes in a different part of the cash flow statement, we've been fairly stable. The reason we showed this is because you can see on an as-reported basis, we took a dip. Well, we had a big gain, which didn't go into the free cash flow, obviously, and then we had cash tax timing issues. So you can see we've been pretty stable on a free cash flow realization basis, and our model says we would continue to be pretty stable going forward as well. So over the last 2 years, which I think are pretty good representations of how we think about the balance between reinvestment and how we think about return of capital, on an absolute base, we generated $32 billion of cash from operations. That's a lot. That's a lot of fuel for the machine. We spent about $7 billion in CapEx. So that left us with $25 billion of free cash flow, 98% realization. Again, right within the kind of the construct of the model. So when we now think about going forward in our free cash flow model, you know, we'll stay above that 90% range. We don't see a big new draw on our capital investment. As Ginny noted in the prior Q&A, a lot of this for us, it tends to be like a lot of things. It's a shift. So we don't have to build a new fab. That money goes into, for instance, cloud data centers. That's how, quite frankly, we were able to build 50 cloud data centers around the world and not have an increase in our capital spending because it's just redirected from what it used to be. And therefore, that drives you to growth in free cash flow kind of in line with profit, right? Steady realization, not a lot of new capital spend, therefore cash grows with profit. That allows also for the return of capital, an annual dividend increase, which we've done now for 21 years. We would expect to be able to increase the dividend going forward as well, you know, in line with profit, right? In line with profit or cash. So inline dividend increases, continue to reduce the share count, and that would essentially consume 70 to 80% of our free cash flow. That builds us a little bit of a cushion, if you will. But again, we've also been acquisitive over the last few years. We've been acquisitive over the last 10 years, and we would expect to continue to be acquisitive. So you can see in total on the bottom left then, between returned and reinvested, we're about balanced. And I think over time, you know, that'll shift around here and there, but plenty of fuel in the machine to both return capital as well as to reinvest to keep the machine going. So to summarize then on a financial model, this is no different than the financial model we shared with you over the last few years. Low single-digit revenue growth, mid-single-digit profit growth. Again, profit comes out of both the revenue growth and the value of those cognitive solutions as well as margin improvements in services. A return of capital through share repurchase says we can grow EPS at high single digit and free cash flow realization above 90%. So let me finish then where I started, which was, and where Ginny started. You know, our investments position us, and we spent a ton of your money, believe me, we have invested a fair bit here. Our investments position us to capitalize on those trends, today's trends in the marketplace, whether it's an aging population and healthcare spending going through the roof, whether it's regulatory frameworks which are exploding and costing our clients more money and time in order to navigate complex regulatory environments. But our investments have positioned us to benefit from those macro trends. Our platforms are also positioned, by the way, to continue to be generating high value. Our platforms like outsourcing and our platforms like mainframe are still here with us. They are all enduring high-value platforms, as are the ones we're building today. So the existing are enduring. Obviously, mainframe's 53, outsourcing's 20 and change, over 20 now. And the new ones will also be high-value. And that allows us to both, again, return capital to our shareholders as well as reinvest. So as I said, a few years ago, you couldn't draw this picture about IBM. And in fact, as we participated in that bottom and that second layer where we had a hybrid software and a systems business, we had a services business, that opened up for us a $1 trillion opportunity, and we competed very, very well. But what we've built over the last few years now is this cognitive solutions and cloud platform company, which opens up a whole new range of opportunity. And our point of view, as we have said, is you need cognitive technologies on a good, strong enterprise-grade cloud platform with an industry point of view in how you put these together. So with that, I will invite my colleagues back up for the afternoon Q&A.